Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes every week on Sunday by email. Get you ready for the week ahead. And don't forget now, in addition to the brilliant things that I write in the newsletter, which I know you, all of you hang on every word that I write, in addition to that, there's also the schedule. We have the schedule for the upcoming week of who's going to be on the show. And many of you probably don't like what I write, but you subscribe for the schedule, and I understand that. Whatever it takes, we don't care. We're just glad you subscribe to our free newsletter, and I hope you'll do that at jbsba.com. Don't forget all the other things you can do at our website, like listening to archives, reading articles, and finding out more about our Brain Trust members, and a lot of other things there. Joan Pride is an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. She's actually one of the original members, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to have you back.
Good. Thank you.
Guess what?
So what's today? What's today?
Yeah, today is No Housework Day. Here, now look, Joan, I don't write this. I just read it, okay? No Housework Day, no trash, no dishes, no making of beds or washing of laundry, and no guilt. Give it a rest.
Wow.
That's what this says right here.
Gee, I want to thank the person who came up with this.
That's the line they gave me.
Oh.
Also, and by the way, why do these always come up on the day that you're here, Joan? For some reason.
Well, yeah, we had a good one last week, didn't we?
Last week was She's Just Funny That Way Day.
Yeah.
And all right, here's another one, though. These two go together. This is Empowered Women Entrepreneurs Day. This is the day for women entrepreneurs who are dedicated to igniting their businesses and fueling their souls.
Well, that's just right up your alley there.
How about that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew you'd be excited about all that.
You must have plenty of listeners who can fit that bill.
We do, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, and I have no idea how to segue that over into the healthcare, except to say the small business owners, Joan, need lots of healthcare because it's costing too much for us to have healthcare and provide that for our employees. It's getting out of hand. And you guys talk about that some this week. In fact, it's on your first page of the Kiplinger letter.
Right, and just so that, you know, but don't change that dial. In case your listeners are concerned that this is going to be lead all about rising health care costs and how terrible things are, this is actually kind of a more positive spin in that we're trying to say how companies are grappling with this and maybe having a little bit of success.
Well, absolutely, and give us some examples, Joan, that you've seen. I've got a couple of stories myself.
Well, I guess number one we say is keep workers healthy. And I think companies are learning more and more to do more preventative, you know, to fund more preventative type medicine instead of waiting till people get sick and rack up big hospital bills.
Well, it's education, aren't they? Companies are, you know, we've interviewed a number of companies over the years, Joan, especially in the last year or so, who have won awards for how they've held their healthcare costs down in an era when healthcare costs have been going up, healthcare insurance costs have been going up in double digits, 10, 11, 12, 13% a year. These companies have been holding their increases down to under 4%, some of them.
And that's incredible to me.
And they've been doing it by encouraging people to stop smoking.
Right.
By closing up the smoking room and making it into a weight room or an exercise room.
That's right.
They have been encouraging people to watch their weight. They've been trying I don't think they've been preaching people or they haven't been browbeating them or anything like that.
No, but watching your weight makes a difference in a number of diseases, particularly diabetes.
That's exactly right. And it's really that's becoming a big issue. In fact, a friend of mine the other day told me he's in his 50s. He told me this guy is in great shape, but he told me he just recently had found out that he was diabetic. And
wow.
And so it can happen to anybody, but especially, as you say, if people are a little bit heavy. One of the things you guys point out is that companies are subsidizing fitness. I mentioned closing up the smoking room and making it an exercise room, but they're spending money on fitness And that's converting into savings on healthcare, isn't it?
Right. I hope you don't mind a little plug for Kiplinger, but I have to say we have a wonderful benefit here that we have a very forward-thinking colleague of mine found a yoga instructor who comes to Kiplinger, and we all pay for the course, but Kiplinger subsidizes anyone who wants to, and I think they pay about a third of the cost.
Have you been going to yoga classes, Joan?
Well, not recently. Yoga's hard, you know.
But have you been doing
harder
it?
Than I
have
thought.
Have you done it some?
I have done it some, yeah.
I've just noticed a little bit more peacefulness about you, Joan.
You know, I walked right into that one.
Can I get a picture of you in the lotus position? That's what I want to see.
But that's a kind of
can you get into
example.
The lotus position, Joan?
No, no. It's not a pretty sight.
See, that's the reason I could never do yoga if they made me get into the lotus position. I'm afraid some bones would have to break if I got into the lotus
position. I think you're right.
The lotus position. What are some other ways that they're doing it, that the companies are holding down costs?
Well, a real good one is nutrition counseling to help people understand how to eat right. And I think you said quit smoking classes.
Right.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Some companies are actually paying their employees. They're giving them bonuses for quitting smoking.
That's an interesting incentive, sure.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, but I've always wondered what the people who don't smoke think about that. You know, I didn't get my $300 because I don't smoke. How come he's getting $300 for smoking? That's always an issue. But one of the things that you point out is that this isn't an immediate effect kind of thing. You can't open up an exercise room and the next day say, okay, when are my healthcare costs coming down?
Well, I think that's the problem. You know, it's hard to measure results right away because you can't. There aren't results right away, but there are results over time. But again, not real easy to measure, but I still think the benefits are there if you're willing to stick with these ideas.
Well, the companies that I talk to that I've interviewed on this show have been doing this for years. One company was a very early adopter way back in the 70s. They actually started paying attention to some of this stuff, and so whenever the healthcare insurance costs started going through the roof, they were already poised to hold those costs down.
Right. Gee.
And you know, Joan, when benefits can be a large portion of which includes healthcare insurance, a large portion of our payroll. Even reducing the increases by half can make a lot of difference in our bottom line. You know it?
Oh, that's right. Sure. So, that makes sense.
Absolutely. When we come back, we're going to get Joan to talk to us about something called asking health care providers to doing business with them based on quality. That's the way to say it. And we're going to ask her to explain that to us right after these messages. Obviously, I need some help with that. 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back. She was a bebop baby on a hard day's night. She was hanging on Johnny, he was holding on. If you leave me now, you'll take away the biggest part of me. We're back, it's 23 after the hour. A little Chicago for you there. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too, because otherwise this wouldn't be nearly as much fun. Joan is Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about healthcare, how to reduce healthcare in your company, healthcare insurance expenses, I guess I should say, and improve the quality of life of our employees. You know, Joan, that's another big area that we really need to never forget, is that the healthier our people are, the more productive our companies are and the happier our people are. I mean, there's so many benefits to this thing, not just saving money. It's not just about the money, is it?
Right. You kind of have to look at it in a much broader scale if you're wondering, is it really worth going to all this trouble? You know, it is worth it for a lot of different reasons.
Well, and then when people are sick, when people are out, it's demoralizing to everybody. It affects the efficiency of the company. And I'm not trying to be insensitive to the human beings, but we've already talked about that issue. And one of the things though that you guys point out is that companies should favor treatments with proven results. Now explain that to us.
Right. This is called evidence-based medicine. And it's sort of interesting because it's not being practiced enough. But what the point here is that you would consider reducing payments for treatments that are performed often but may not be that beneficial. And the example we give here is arthroscopic knee surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And then also kind of looking at your healthcare providers and paying them, you know, based on how the quality and efficiency of the work they perform, you know, not just whoever the lowest bidder is.
Well, you know, and Joan, this is just all about being better consumers, not only as patients, but as the company that provides this care. You know, for years and years, for decades, really, generations, companies would just provide health care for their employees, and they wouldn't even keep up with what the people were having done, and it was just, the bill would just build up and build up and build up, and now it's just gotten out of hand to the point where we have to all be a little smarter, we have to be a lot smarter, actually, as consumers, and companies and employees need to be partners in how they spend these healthcare dollars, don't they?
Right, exactly. That's very important.
Well, and you point out here also that companies are paying healthcare providers, and this is the thing I was getting hung up on, not trying to explain a minute ago, you're paying healthcare providers on the basis of quality and efficiency. Now, what does that mean?
Well, you don't look just, this is kind of tricky. I mean, we've been talking about the bottom line all morning. You're trying not to just look at the bottom line, but looking at how well they're doing their job and how efficiently they're doing their job,
well,
which in the end gives you cost savings.
Right, which assumes, the thing that I'm interested in here, though, this assumes that you've got some kind of dialogue with these providers and that you've got some kind of competition. If your florist doesn't do a good job or your dry cleaner doesn't do a good job, you can always go somewhere else. I think a lot of people feel like with all the HMOs and all the managed care stuff, I think we feel like maybe we don't have that many choices. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I think people do feel locked in.
But I think that's a direction that we're going to be heading in.
Right.
And, you know, I like what Steve Forbes said about this. Last time he was on the show, he talked about how they actually do their health care in their company. He says they basically have HSAs, health savings accounts, and that the company pays each employee $2,000 above the deductible, and they can use that money however they want to use it.
Oh, I see.
You see what I mean? But they have to pay for that. They have to pay for the minor stuff.
Right.
But they do have the catastrophic coverage with the HSA.
Oh, so they have the new health savings account.
Basically, that's the way I understand it. But the essence, regardless of the mechanism, regardless of the system that they're using, what he's trying to get across is that he and his company and his employees they're making themselves better consumers of healthcare.
Consumers, right?
And they're taking some of their own risks. They're being a little self-insured. They're
right.
Not running to the doctor if they've got the sniffles and they thought somebody else was going to pay for it instead of taking an aspirin. You know, in the old days they'd go to the doctor. Now they're saying, well, wait a minute, I know what this is. I can take some antihistamine. I'll clear this up and I won't go to the doctor and spend the money.
Yeah, that's quite a big shift from years ago when everything was what they called fee for service.
Right, right. And also, Joan, I want to remind folks of something we said earlier. This kind of an approach, and you guys point this out in the last point here on this coverage that you had this week in the Kiplinger letter, and that is that this type of approach is a long-term approach. It's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Right, and I think we say it takes typically several years for you to see your claims going down and premiums getting lowered, so you really have to stick with it.
Have you seen the commercial where the guy is standing on the scales and he weighs 249 and he steps
off
the scale?
Yes, he runs around the room.
He runs around the room one time and gets back on the scales and weighs, then the thing still says 249. And
right.
he whacks the scales because he's not happy with the result. Folks,
right.
It's not going to be like that.
Good example. Yeah, you can't run around the room and come back and assume that you'll see a change right away.
It's going to take more time, but
right.
Joan, I'll tell you, folks, if you use some of these other companies like the ones that we've interviewed on the show, and you if everybody else's cost of healthcare is increasing, say at 10%, and the day will come when you could get yours down to no more than 5%, take whatever that cost is that increase, do the math on that you had this year. Take that 5% and drop it right to the bottom line and see whether that'll motivate you to do some of the things that Kipling recommends this week. Jones, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about the economy, and then we're going to talk about selling right after these messages. It's 29 after. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. One more thing.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much. Staying with us today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're moving over now to page two, talking about the economy. March jobs were a little soft. The report was a little soft. What was it, 110,000 or something like that?
I think that's right, yes.
A little over 100,000 or so, I've forgotten. Something under 200,000, as I remember. And that, some people said that was a little bit of soft numbers. That wasn't exactly.
Just a brief pause.
Yeah. Where are we
We're
headed?
Not worried.
Where are we headed on this?
We say the economy is still on track to generate 2.5 million jobs this year, which doesn't sound too bad to me.
Pretty good.
But we do say, we mention the Fed here, that the Federal Reserve can have some breathing space now, although, I don't know, I guess the question is, does the Fed hike a quarter point or a half point at their next meeting in May?
Well, they're on the interest rate hiking trail.
Tear.
These days.
Yeah, they're on a tear.
Yeah, and they seem to only know how to go in one direction at a time. And so, you know, Joan, I've given them, I've really kind of laid off of them now for some time.
You have. I've been worried about you.
For a couple of years, but I'm going to have to start being a little more adamant in my attitude toward them. And I think they need to back off a little bit. I think they've raised rates enough so far. And I'm starting to feel a little better about my attitude about it. I was worried about myself too, Joan. It's not any fun if I can't criticize the Fed.
I know. You know, bring that soapbox out.
You like my soapbox, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Another thing with regard to the economy, Joan, is the competitive pressure that China is putting on not only the United States, but the world. And at the bottom of that section, you guys talking about another new victim of China, and that's an industry that we might not have thought about lately.
Right, and we've talked about, I think, you know, maybe computers in the past, and I know recently we talked about furniture, and now we're talking
about automobiles too.
And automobiles, and now we're talking about cardboard box makers. And I know you're saying, who cares about cardboard box makers? Well, it's a big business. And we're saying that we're losing, I think it looks like, $2 billion worth of business because of this encroachment.
Well, a lot of people don't realize what's going on in China. It's a very interesting place over there. And the Chinese economy is not that big in terms of a global perspective. It's actually only about one-sixth or so the size of the U.S. economy. And it's less than a third the size of Japan, for example. It's under $2 trillion. I think it's somewhere around $1.5 trillion or so. But the news out of China is that for several years now, and probably for the foreseeable future, the China economy is growing and is expected to grow at a 9% annual rate.
Gee.
That's double what we consider to be almost overheated over here.
Right, that's right. Yeah, that's way over. That's white hot, I think.
That's right. So I wonder, and they're saying, a lot of economists are predicting that in the next 20 to 40 years, depending on who you talk to, that China is going to become the largest economy in the world, and with this kind of erosion of jobs, the way you're talking about with the cardboard industry, you can kind of see how that happens. But you know, Joan, that kind of growth has, at some point in time, has got to become unsustainable.
And absolutely.
I don't know. Instinctively, I just see a little bit of leveling out there. Of course, that doesn't help the people who've just lost their jobs. But this, don't you think that this speaks to what you guys report this week? Don't you think this speaks to the fact that in America, we've got to make sure that we know what kinds of 21st century jobs we can sustain in this country and focus on those and not focus on the ones that we can't sustain?
Well, that's right. That's a good point, because we're just wasting our time and energy and resources if we try to do otherwise.
Well, and where we run into the brain damage, where we run into the anguish, is in the conversion from the 20th century infrastructure to the 21st century infrastructure.
Right, right.
And so that's one of the challenges we have. Automobiles is another area, Joan. I understand that China is going to be importing automobiles, maybe not soon, but before too long, I think, they're going to be importing automobiles. I read something the other day that said that they're going to be good automobiles, and they're going to be much, much cheaper than the ones that are made here in the United States.
Wow.
Wonder what that's going to do to that industry.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's something to think about. Going to take a quick. We can't be naive about this, folks. This is not something we're going to be able to stop. We've got to learn how to deal with it. 20 till. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. We come back, we're going to talk about selling. We're going to talk about public finance, travel, technology, and lots of other good stuff. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and thank you for joining us. Thank you for staying with us. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I've told you about the Kiplinger folks and all the products that they produce that are outstanding, and they've got a great website, kiplinger.com. KIPLINGER.com. It's a lot of free stuff there on the site you can check out. But if you want to find out more about what they do, I encourage you to subscribe to their publications. And you know about the Kiplinger letter. I've been telling you about that for a long time. In fact, what Joan, we did the 80th and the 85th anniversary show and interviewed Mr. Kiplinger, Mr. Austin Kiplinger. And so I'm looking forward to the 90th it was the 75th and the 80th. That's what it was.
Right, right.
75th and 80th. Anyway, we're glad to be a part of to know these guys. And the Kiplinger letter is the weekly letter that's been coming out now since 1923. Jones.
That's right.
You weren't quite an original member of the company, Jones.
I came along a couple years later.
And then they've got the three biweekly letters: the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then there's some kind of a magazine comes out once a month, Joan. What is that all about?
Sure does. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Only kidding. It's a very important, very famous magazine that many of you see on the newsstands. And Joan, you know, I worked really hard for that 30-day free trial. You guys still offering that?
Sure are.
All right. So tell them that I sent you, folks. When you go, you can subscribe at Kiplinger. But Joan, you also have a phone number too, don't you?
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
All right. So check that out when you get a chance, and take advantage of that 30-day free trial and see if you like what they have to say. Joan, let's move down and talk about the sale of luxury items. And you know, I wanted to make sure we talked about this because I know you're doing your part in this area. The sale of luxury item products will hit $1 trillion by decade end. Now, that's, you know, that right now the national GDP, the U.S. GDP, is $11 trillion.
Right. And I have a piece of that, believe me.
I was going to say, I'm sure that Ray would agree with this, but I know you're doing your part. But how about that $1 trillion of luxury products? What is a luxury product, Joan?
Well, I'm assuming expensive clothing, jewelry, boats, things like that.
The new yacht that you just bought and the jet.
There you go. That you guys
just bought.
Paid for in part by my salary from this show.
Right, yeah. but you say that's going to be 20% of total retail sales. How about that?
Up from 12% now. That's quite an increase, I think.
Right. Now, so here's the thing, Joan. What does that say about the health of the overall U.S. economy? What do you think?
Well, I think it shows an expanding economy, and I think that's good news for the economy.
Well, it seems to me that if luxury items, and of course we could probably call luxury items just maybe the top of the line of things that we all own maybe, and if that's happening, if that's growing at that kind of a rate, which looks like about a 40% increase over the next few years, you know, that's not going to just be bought by people who are rich today and people who are doing well today. It seems to me that if that's correct, if you guys are correct in this, and I'm sure that you are, I think that's a good omen for our overall economy over the next few years, don't you?
Well, I sure hope so, yeah.
Yeah, from my mouth to God's ears, right?
Right.
Let's talk about public finance, Joan. You guys point out that a lot of the states are going to be doing more outsourcing. Tell us about that.
That's right. It's interesting because we've talked about the federal government outsourcing, but we're saying the states are going to move even faster to privatize. They need help from the private sector because their budgets are tight and they want to improve the quality of their basic services that they provide to their citizens.
You know, Joan, 10, 20, 30 years ago, every plant and every time a blade of grass got mowed or a wall got painted or a piece of furniture got moved in a major plant in America or in a governmental office or installation in America, it was done by an employee of that operation, of that organization. Today,
right,
most of those jobs, and now what you're reporting is it's getting down to the state levels, more and more of those jobs are being done by contractors.
That's right.
It's called outsourcing. And, Joan, this is why I've said for a long time, outsourcing is one of the best things that ever happened to small businesses. Because, Joan, most of those jobs that are being contracted out are going to small businesses.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
See, because where are the small businesses? I mean, all these state operations you're talking about, these are out in the across the state in these little towns and in smaller cities.
Right.
And it's more efficient for a small business owner to pick up these contracts.
That makes sense.
And folks, if you'd like to know how to do this, I'm going to give you a hint. I'm going to give you a website, actually. The SBA has been developing now for 3 or 4 years. They're continuing to do this. The business matchmaking events. Go to businessmatchmaking.com. And this is not in the Kiplinger letter, but I'm throwing this in there. This is where you can go and meet not only federal contractors and federal agencies, but also state agencies in those regions where those matchmaking events are held. And Joan, this is a great way for small business owners to get right through to the decision maker for these contracts.
Sounds like a great idea.
Well, it is. And the next one, by the way, is the last week in April in Washington, D.C. Joan, airlines are having a hard time, aren't they?
Boy, you said it. Just when you think it can't get any worse, it does.
And service, you guys report, is getting worse.
Yeah, that's right. And we're saying it's not going to get any better. There's going to be more belt tightening by airlines.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that whole industry shakes out over the next few years. And the increase in fuel expenses that we're all experiencing right now is not helping them either. Quick break. 10 till right after these messages, we're going to talk with Joan Price some more about the ultimate tools for road warriors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Your heart may be broken tonight.
Are you reeling in the years? Slowing away the time. Are you gathering up the keys?
We're back at 7 till. Little Steely Dan for you there. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Price, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, there, you guys are reporting this week that there are some ultimate tools for road warriors just years away. Now, I want you to tell us about this, but these things sound an awful lot like some of the things that I've got right now.
Wow. Well, then you probably know more about this than I do, but what we're saying is these things will combine, I guess, a landline phone, a cell phone, and a PDA, personal digital assistant, and a personal computer.
Okay.
So it's kind of an all-in-one communicator.
Well, and the I've got a BlackBerry that has a cell phone, a PDA. I can get email. I can actually surf the web if I want to. I don't really like to do it because it's not really all that. It's not really all that handy on the web. It doesn't do a great job. It takes too long to get through the. It's not the same experience that you get with a regular computer. But it has a bunch of other gadgets. But this does sound a little bit more developed. What you're talking about here, with a landline and the PC angle. Maybe that means that the screen is going to be a little more, it's going to be a little more useful in terms of using the internet.
Oh, I see. Right.
I hope that's what that means.
Right.
But Joan, the new BlackBerry and maybe some of the other new handhelds, the other PDAs, the new ones are coming out with instant messaging capability.
Wow.
How about that?
That's really something.
That's going to be interesting to see. We reported that this week with our friend Jeffrey Zabar earlier this week. He pointed that out to us. But, you know, Joan, do you have a PDA? Do you have a personal digital assistant?
No, I'm still back in the dark ages.
You're still working off of paper, Joan? Well, I've got a BlackBerry, and I have to say it's pretty darn handy.
Wow.
Because I've got all of my contact information in it. All the other numbers that people that I know.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm traveling or whatever, and I want to send one of them an email or make a call or whatever, I just go over and get that, find them in my PDA, in my contact management software, and pull it up and either send them an email or make a call. It's pretty handy.
Couldn't be easier.
Yeah, and of course it's a cell phone too. The problem that you run into, Joan, and this is what we talked about with Jeffrey earlier, are people who get addicted to these things. You know, some people call them crackberries.
I believe that.
They call them crackberries, and I've seen people like that. I mean, I've seen people who have these things, and they can't keep it out of their hands.
Well, I've read about congressional aides who will, like, keep a pool on how long it will take their boss to check his BlackBerry or her BlackBerry when they're in a hearing, beginning of the hearing. Yeah.
I saw that, and it was just, is it going to be 8 seconds or 10 seconds before reaches down and checks his email or whatever? But that's going to be some new technology. You know, the cool thing about these PDAs, Joan, is that it's literally technology convergence in front of your very eyes.
Right.
And what you guys are talking about is the next level of convergence, where you can go to the next level and you know, I think I mentioned years ago, Joan, that I'm waiting on the hologram, you know, the heads up display like they have in jet fighters.
Oh yeah.
You know, you won't clip it on your belt, you won't put it in your pocket. Mm-hmm. You'll have it like it'll come out of your watch or something. You push your Dick Tracy watch, a button on your Dick Tracy watch, and the hologram will pop up and all of your stuff will be on a heads up display hologram form, right?
That's amazing.
What do you think?
I don't know.
Joan, you're going to need to get a PDA before you get to that level. You're not going to be able to make a quantum leap, Joan.
You need to make
baby steps, exactly.
That's right.
Joan, let's move over and talk about trade. High oil, over on page 4, high oil import bills aren't a complete drain on the economy. Now, what's that mean?
Well, we're saying that a lot of the dollars that are sent abroad will come back to us from the OPEC nations. They're buying U.S. securities and investing in this country.
Well, they are, and that's one of the reasons why we've been able to do okay as an economy, even though our dollar's devalued.
That's right.
People still want to invest in dollars, don't they?
Oh, no question about it.
And that's one of the things that the experts are tracking. They're kind of watching that, and they're wringing their hands just a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're worried, you know, and this whole China thing is part of it, too. I mean, at what point in time does a U.S. security, a U.S. dollar-backed security, at what point in time does that start being not quite as attractive as some other things?
That's right.
And they think that's a ways off, but it's something that they are concerned about. Joan, good news out of Iraq this week. They elected a Kurd, a Shiite, and a Sunni in the top three positions in the
that's
country.
That's good that they weren't all three, you know, one persuasion, that they were three different ones.
Can't we take that as a good sign, Joan?
Sure, let's hope so.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And God bless all of our troops and all the personnel that are over there helping them make that happen. Joan, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.